very much. Pleasure then
to ask Brother Simon to come forward and to speak to us. His first address is entitled The Outer Court.
Brethren and sisters, before we look in particular at the outer court, there is one point which we would just like to mention, and it's a point which was raised and mentioned to us by a sister last time, and we're very grateful that she did. I'd just like to turn to two passages. Firstly, 1 Kings and chapter 7. The reason that we're looking at these is, we may remember, for those of us that were here last time, that we came across one measurement, I think it was, where it was apparent that Ezekiel had seen one feature several times, and had added the length together and told us that there was a length of so many cubits, and we suggested that the actual length of one of the features was in fact half, because he looked at two and added the lengths together. Now there's a principle which comes out here. First of all, 1 Kings chapter 7 and verse 15. We are of course with Solomon and Solomon's temple, and we're with the two pillars. Verse 15 of 1 Kings 7, "For he cast two pillars of brass of 18 cubits apiece, and a line of 12 cubits did compass either of them about." And there's no doubt we get the full description of these pillars, and we know which they are. We come to the end of verse 21, and he set up the left pillar and called the name of their eyes Boaz, and Yakin is the other one earlier in the verse. But the point is, we're clearly told in verse 15, he cast two pillars of brass of 18 cubits high apiece. We'll compare that with 2 Chronicles in chapter 3. Second of Chronicles, chapter 3, and again, verse 15. "Also, he made before the house two pillars of 35 cubits high, and the chapter that was on the top of each of them was 5 cubits." And so there we see one measurement of 18 and another measurement of 35. Now, plainly, if 18 was doubled, it will be 36 and not 35. There is a reason why, and it's to do with the chapter and the capital and so on, which is on the top, and it all depends which is included and which isn't. I'll leave that for you to fathom out for yourselves. But the point is, clearly we have described here the same two pillars, once where we're told it is 18, and once 35, where plainly the measure has been doubled. So there we have that principle elsewhere other than in Ezekiel. So we'd like now then to turn to the passage which we read together, Ezekiel in chapter 46. You may remember that last time we spent nearly all of the time, as far as the building was concerned, looking at the gateways which are in the buildings of the outer court. Those gateways which in fact give access from the outside and go through the buildings completely and come out into the outer court. And we left ourselves with the site which Ezekiel would have seen, having come through the gateway, and he would have turned perhaps to the left or the right and seen something like that with the corner courts in the far distance. Well, let's look at chapter 46 then, and verse 19. "After he brought me through the entry which was at the side of the gate unto the holy chambers of the priests which looketh toward the north, and behold, there was a place on the two sides westward. And he said unto me, This is the place where the priests shall boil the trespass offering and the sin offering, where they bake the meat offering, and they bear them not into the utter court to sanctify the people." And so, having looked to the one side or the other, he sees the corner courts, and they are described as where the priests boil the trespass offering and the sin offering, and where they bake the meat offering. So the corner courts then are courts of preparation. Preparation of the food which is offered for the by way of sacrifice. And it is consumed by the priests, as it was under the law. And then, verse 21, he brought me forth into the utter court, so he's back into the outer court, so we can see something as we see on the screen there. And he caused me to pass by the four corners of the court. And behold, in every corner of the court, there was a court. And so, just as the whole of the outer court has four sides, so we can assume from the reading, as we have it in verse 21, is that at each corner we have the tower, which we can see in the distance there, and that tower is not solid, but it is of itself a court. In other words, it is hollow and it has four sides to it. And so in verse 22, in the four corners of the court were courts joined of 40 cubits long and 30 cubits broad. Well, let's stay with the word joined for a moment. You may see in the margin it has made with chimneys. Now, we can't detail just exactly where the chimneys were, but suffice it to say, we've already read that in verse 20, the offerings were prepared. And so it would seem that then would need to be chimneys, because the offerings are prepared within these courts. And so the heat and so on has to be removed, and so it is described as made with chimneys. And then we read that it is 40 cubits long and 30 cubits broad. The four corners were of one measure. Now, we would suggest that the four corners, looking upon plan, looking down, are square. That is because as they form the corner of the building, and the outer court is the same on the north, south, east and west, then looking down it would seem sensible that the court which joins each corner together should be square. But we have a measure which says it is 40 by 30. And so if the 40 is vertical, then the 30 is the horizontal measure. Now there we have a section through the outer court, and we may remember from last time that the distance from the entrance there through the gateway, including the porch and the pillar of the porch, was 50 cubits. And we may remember that the porch itself was 8 cubits and then 2 cubits for the pillar. And so from the outer face of the pillar to the face of the building was 10 cubits. And so the building itself then, as far as the outer court buildings are concerned, is 40 cubits. We have 50 to start with, we take off the 10, and that leaves us with 40. The same on the other side, and we shan't look at it, but we shall take it as read, that the distance from the face of the one to the face of the other building there is 100 cubits. So plainly, from there, from the inner face of the inner court buildings to the outer face of the outer court buildings, must be 100 plus 240s is 180 cubits. Now, coming back to our verse in verse 22, we've suggested that the 40 is vertical and the 30 is horizontal. Now, notice in verse 22, as we read elsewhere, many times, that the word cubits is in italics. Now, it's been put against the 40, but not the 30, which rather supports the view which we put forward before, that where no measure is given, then we should stay with the measure which is mentioned in chapter 40, which is the reed. And since the we have 30 reeds, then plainly we must have 180 cubits across. So the corner courts are 180 cubits square, which is exactly the width of the outer court buildings and the court combined. And so we see how it fits exactly. The corners are exactly the same dimension as the outer court buildings. We ought really to be rather more precise in our terminology from now on. We've rather glibly referred to the buildings which we see in section there as being outer court. That's not strictly true. The court is the space between the buildings. The outer court buildings are those plainly which are on the outside of the building. In other words, those which are visible from the outside. Now, the buildings which are parallel to those, but which are on the other side of the outer court, are in fact the inner court buildings. So we have outer court buildings and inner court buildings which surround the outer court and which are all the same. So we see then that the vertical distance, coming back to verse 22, is 40 cubits. Sorry, I've got to read it there now. It's 40 cubits, as we have in the Authorised Version, 40 reeds. And let's just remind ourselves back in chapter 40 of what the reed is. The reed in verse 5, at the end of verse 5, we'll read all verse 5, and behold, a wall on the outside of the house round about, and a man's hand, a measuring reed of 6 cubits long by 1 cubit and a hand breadth. So the reed is 6 cubits. So then, if we have a vertical measure of 40 reeds, we should have a measure of 240 reeds. Now, if we go to the trouble to actually look at what Brother Sully says about these corner courts, he emphasises to us the marvellous structure, both from an architectural point of view and from the point of view that nothing like it had been seen upon the earth as far as buildings were concerned at the time. Now, that was perfectly true. And as far as the bulk of these things is concerned, we wouldn't wish to disagree with what Brother Sully has said. But having said that, it is easy to read what he says and be carried along with the spirit of what he says and think that there is nothing like it upon the surface of the earth. Well, we don't wish to make any point by saying this other than just to demonstrate that there are other buildings about. Now, it isn't going to be very clear. That was better than I thought. Now, this proves nothing other than that I can't draw. But down here, we have what can only be described as a representation of a corner tower. Now, that is the building which is described as being quite enormous by Brother Sully, and indeed it is. But just to put it into practice, into comparison rather, Brother Sully draws a parallel with St. Paul's Cathedral and says how it would tower above it, and so it does. But in London, the largest building in this country is the NatWest Tower, which is 600 feet high, which compared to the corner towers are of 480 feet, is quite a bit taller. Canary Wharf, not yet complete, but will be 800 feet high. We'll need to bother with the next one. Here's an interesting one, insofar as the Eiffel Tower was completed only 2 years after Brother Sully had published his work. And by way of comparison, the middle balcony of the Eiffel Tower is roughly the same height as the corner tower. So for those of you that have been bold enough to venture to that middle tower and you've seen the fantastic view that comes from there, it's roughly the same as the height of these corner towers. But just by way of comparison, there are other buildings. the World Trade Center in Chicago, the Empire State Building, the Sears Tower, and the building the Trump City not yet built. The Trump City, 1,835 feet high. Enormous buildings, quite enormous, even compared to the Ancient Courts. But we just mention that to give some idea of the scale of the buildings which are around. But brethren and sisters, mark this. The buildings which we are considering this night will last for the duration of the millennium. They will be more wonderful and more beautiful than anything which the world has ever seen. And we rather suspect that the buildings which we see there will come tumbling to the ground. At best they will be redundant, because they are commercial buildings of which man will have no more use. And so we leave them just there for something that is away from Christ. Our buildings, brethren and sisters, are magnificent. They are the centre of worship of the age to come. And so they are to concern us for the remainder of the evening. And so come back with me to... No, we'll stay with chapter 40, sorry. Chapter 40, and we'll pick up where we left off. Chapter 40 and verse 23. And there was a row of building round about them four, which again supports a suggestion that the buildings are themselves hollow and have a courtyard in each of the corners. And it was made with boiling places under the rows round about. So here is the place then of the preparation of the sacrifices for consumption. Then said he unto me, these are the places of them that boil. Now the word places there literally means a house, a place of habitation. And so the suggestion is that the corner courts are indeed places of habitation for the priests which engage in this work. They live on the premises, so to speak. They do their work there and they live there. And if our thoughts are correct, they will live there in rotation, and they will be there in rotation as the priesthood was organised by David. But that's another subject. So then, where the ministers of the house shall boil the sacrifices of the people. Now that is a most important phrase which we shall just draw to our attention and say no more about it until we pick it up later. They shall boil the sacrifice of the people. And the sacrifice of the people is the sin offering and the trespass offering. Those mentioned back in verse 20, the trespass offering and the sin offering. Now they are different to other offerings which are mentioned elsewhere. It will be next time, God willing, that we pick up that thought. But suffice it to say, sin and trespass offerings are associated with the people. We just mention it just as something to pick up from another time. Well, now we go back then to chapter 40. We just want to pick up verse 19, because here we have the proof for something which we took as read a few moments ago. Chapter 40 and verse 19, he measured the breadth from the forefront of the lower gate unto the forefront of the inner court without, 100 cubits eastward and northward. This is the 100 cubits which we mentioned earlier. It's 100 cubits from the face of the gate. Notice the forefront of the lower gate, that's the one he's just measured, which was the outer court, so he's gone from there to the forefront of the inner court, so he's moved across the outer court, to the forefront of the inner court. So this building is definitely relates to the inner court, although it's identical to the one on the other side. And he says that is 100 cubits eastward and northward. So it doesn't matter whether he's in the eastward court or the northward court, it's the same measure, supporting the notion that the building is identical on all four sides. So we have the 100 cubit measure then from one side to the other. 100 cubits or 200 feet. Now some may have a little difficulty. That should be the right way around, wouldn't it? There we are. A little difficulty and say, well, how far is 200 feet? Well, maybe you came on a motorway, or maybe you drive on one from time to time. Well, 200 feet is enough width to get all the carriages of the motorway and the hard shoulder and perhaps the boundary on either side in there comfortably. So next time you're driving along a nice straight stretch of motorway, just think that if you had buildings on either side, that would be the width of the outer court and indeed room to spare. So we can see then that this is an area of quite enormous proportions, because each side we saw before was a mile long. It just so happens that from corner court to corner court is exactly 1 mile as far as the inside measurements are concerned, and as we see, some 200 feet across, and we have this porch which runs along the full length. So there would be shaded areas as well. Although with the terrific height of the buildings, there would be shade from that source as well. So it would be shaded, there would be plenty of room, and it would be an ideal area for the people of the world to come to mingle one with the other, to talk one with another, as they go from one building to another. And indeed, we read references, which we shan't turn up this evening, of children playing in the streets. And just a suggestion, but perhaps that is the street in which they will play as their parents are engaged in more weighty matters. We'll stay with chapter 40 then and come to verse 17. Chapter 40 and verse 17. He brought me into the outward court, and lo, there were chambers, and a pavement made for the court round about, and 30 chambers were upon the pavement. Now the pavement simply means a broad area. Now we tend these days to think of the pavement as that bit which goes alongside of the road, and it tends to be fairly narrow. Not necessarily so. Anything which has a hard, flat surface can be said to be paved, and it can be inside or indeed outside, provided it meets those criteria. And so, remember, we are in the outward court, and so we are only concerned with the buildings of the outer court, not the buildings of the inner court, although they are the same. And that's an important point we shall see in a moment. He's just in the outer court, the outside row of buildings. And then he says, lo, there were chambers. So upon this outer court, there were chambers, there were buildings, and a pavement made for the court round about. 30 chambers were upon the pavement. Now here we have now the first item, which may cause a little difficulty, to do with the 30 chambers. Because what we're being told here is that along that mile length of outer court building, there are these 30 chambers. Except to say that we feel sure, that we agree, as Brother Sully has it, that those 30 chambers are the 30 chambers as measured along three sides. And the chambers which are mentioned are, for want of a better way of putting it, the building between the gates. Now, although the gateways are quite large in themselves, they show up on here, there's one, for example, as being quite small. We're actually looking at the half plan. We're looking at the south side, and the gaps are the gates which we looked at last time, and the shaded areas are the chambers which we have described in verse 17. And you may see that from by going from east to west, there are 10 of the chambers along each side. They aren't, incidentally, all the same size, but we'll come to that in a moment. And so the 30 which are mentioned are, as we suggest, on the east and on the south and on the north. The reason that we suggest that there are none on the west is because the west side is not mentioned anywhere in these chapters other than as a completion of the square. We're told how long it is, and it is mentioned incidentally to the fact that the building is a square. There are no gates described, there are no chambers described, the court isn't described, which would lead us to the view that there are no gates on that outer western side, or if they are, they're permanently closed. And the reason for that, brethren and sisters, is fairly straightforward. We shall see in a moment that the north and the south side is for the use of the mortal population. And we shall see that the eastern side is for the use of the prince. And the eastern side can be regarded, again for want of a better description, as the front. So the prince, and we would suggest the saints, use the main front entrance, that is to say the eastern side, although physically the same as the others, and the mortal population use the north and the south. We shall pick up these points and for more detail as we go along. And so verse 18, and the pavement by the side of the gates, over against the length of the gates, was the lower pavement. And so described in verse 18 is a lower pavement, which plainly would imply that there are other pavements which are higher than the one mentioned in verse 18, which gives us the first clue that there's more than one floor to the building. And all that has been described in verse 17 and 18 is the ground floor. The ground floor upon which these 30 chambers, 10 along three sides, are built. And so the pavements by the side of the gates over against the length of the gates. So the length of the gates, we may recall, is in fact the width of the outer court buildings. If we just look at the shaded section, the length of the gate going from the outside through into the outer court building is its length, which must therefore be the same as the width of the buildings concerning the outer court. The length obviously is the mile, and so the width is the 40 cubits plus the 10 for the porch. And so these chambers, the length of them is between the gates, the width of them is the same as the length of the gates, which plainly must be the case. But we see from chapter 40 and verse 17 these 30 chambers, which remember we said is just the outer court buildings, because we're told that in verse 17. So it's just these outer row of buildings, not the inside ones, combine to form 30. Let's move on to chapter 45 and verse 4, because we find there another number of chambers mentioned. chapter 45, and we'll pick up at verse 4. The holy portion of the land shall be for the priests and the ministers of the sanctuary, which shall come near to minister unto the Lord. And it shall be a place for their houses and an holy place for the sanctuary. 5 and 20,000 in length and 10,000 in breadth shall also the Levites, the ministers of the house, have for themselves for a possession for 20 chambers. Now what's being described here is the holy oblation. And again, we may recall from last time, the holy oblation is split into three sections. There is the northernmost section of 10,000 in length, the middle section also 10, and the lower section for the city of 5,000, making the 25. And what's described in verse 5 is that middle section. The northern section, we may recall from last time, was for the sons of Zadok and was most holy. We have that in verse 3. Verse 5 is the middle section, which is for the Levites. Now, we're told something else in verse 5. The ministers of the house, we shall pick up that point a little later on. The Levites are the ministers of the house, and they have for themselves a possession of 20 chambers. So the Levites have the middle section of the holy oblation. They also have 20 chambers, which tells us that those 20 chambers must be in that middle section of the holy oblation. And this enables us to locate the temple exactly, because the division between the portion of the holy oblation which relates to the sons of Zadok, that's the northernmost portion, and the middle portion for the Levites must therefore lie along a line there, where we've tried to show that the parallel buildings which flank the outer court, that is the outer court buildings and the inner court buildings on the southern side, all must lie within the southern part, the middle portion of the holy oblation, which is for the sons of Levi. Remember, verse 5, also the Levites, the ministers of the house, shall have for themselves, that's the middle section of the holy oblation, and 20 chambers. So they have 10 chambers of the outer court and 10 chambers of the inner court, all on the one side. The remainder of the building, including the circle, must all lie in the northernmost portion for the sons of Zadok. And this supports the view that the chambers are 10 along the outer court and 10 along the inner court, along each side. Here we have 20 measured, because we have 10 upon each side, which is consistent with the idea that if we just measure the outer ones and go along three sides, we get the 30 which we saw in chapter 40 and verses 17 and 18. And so move back then to chapter 40 and verse 30. Chapter 40 and verse 30, where we read, "And the arches round about were 5 and 20 cubits long and 5 cubits broad. Now the expression round about in verse 30, according to Brother Sully, literally means everywhere the eye turned. And you remember we emphasised last time the source of Brother Sully's Hebrew. But we'll leave that on one side. If we look it up in Strong's, it comes from a root meaning to surround or to border. And so, verse 30, the arches either were everywhere the eye looked, or surrounded or bordered. And here is the idea that arches go along the entire length of the building. And the suggestion is that, and we can't prove it, but the suggestion is that all of the arches are the same. And we have what is quite an important measure in verse 30, which is the 5 and 20 cubits long, which is from the inside face of one part of the arch to the inside face of the other. It doesn't include the width of the arch. We shall come to that important thing a little later. But suffice it to say, we have the arches round about. And they're not mentioned anywhere else, but they are mentioned 14 times in this chapter. We don't wish to make any particular point about the 14. You can work that out perhaps for yourselves. But the point is this. The arches are mentioned time and time again in this chapter. And despite that, some would say, well, the arch was something which Brother Sully was rather fond of because he was a Victorian architect and, well, they liked that sort of thing. It's rather ornate and perhaps, buildings today are all rather square and uniform and we don't have this sort of arrangement. Brethren and sisters, don't be led astray by that sort of argument. First of all, Brother Sully didn't put those arches there because of Victorian architectural fashion. He put them there because he finds them described in the scripture and for no other reason. Secondly, let's not concern ourselves with what may or may not have been fashion at the time. Because although in the intervening years, yes, all right, buildings tend to be rectangular and so on. But these days, brethren and sisters, you pay a premium to have a window in your house with a little arch built in. And very fashionable they are too. And so the arch is back in fashion. We needn't concern ourselves, not worried about architectural fashion, got nothing to do with it. They are described 14 times in this chapter. There is another very sound reason for having the arch, and that is the arch is a very, very strong structural member. If that distance of 25 cubits, which remember is 50 feet or so, had to be spanned in a horizontal fashion, then a rather large, bulky structure would be needed. But here we have the arch, which in terms of the size of the building is a very fitting, graceful thing which goes along the entire length. And as we said, the suggestion is that all of the arches are the same. And of course the 25 ties up exactly with the gate which we saw last time. And that brings us then to the number of these arches and the length of building which they occupy. And which in turn hinges upon the number of gates, which again has been the subject of much fraught discussion. And if anybody thinks that we are going to prove how many gates there are, you are going to be mistaken. I don't believe that we can prove how many gates there are. We can make some suggestions, and we shall leave it at that. Brother Sully suggests that there are 11 gates. He makes that suggestion, and it is an entirely reasonable one, and incidentally he makes no stronger claim for his suggestion than that it is entirely reasonable. It is entirely reasonable because we've already seen that each length of the outer court is divided into 10 sections. Now, plainly, if there are 10 sections, and if those sections are divided by the gates, then there must either be 9, 10, or 11 gates. The sheer logistics of it demands that those are the options. And so Brother Sully suggests that there are 11. And this must relate, therefore, to the number of arches, if they are all the same. Well, let's engage then in a little bit of arithmetic. We know that the length of each side, measured along the outside of the building, is 500 reeds, which is therefore 300 cubits. We have seen that the outer courts are 180 cubits. Plainly there are two along the measure of each side, so that's 360 cubits, which we must take off for the corners. Now, I'm not going to try and prove the next bit this evening, but if we just think for a moment, when we have a series of arches, and we shall go on to see in a moment that we are going to take the measure from the centre of one arch to the centre of the next and so on all the way along. Well, that's all right till you get to the end. But when you get to the end, you've only got half a pillar to support the arch. And so therefore we must make an allowance for a full pillar at each end. So there's two extra halves at each end, which is 5 cubits in total. And so we must therefore have a space left for the arches of 365 cubits. Now, if our measure of the arch is correct, that must work exactly. Now, we saw in chapter 40 and verse 30 that the span of the arch was 5 and 20 cubits, which we said was from the inside face to the next inside face of the adjacent arch. So if we want to measure from centre to centre of each arch, we must make it rather broader. And it transpires, if you follow through the description of the arches, that we can make the arch to be 31. I know I've just presented that there without any evidence at all. Please believe me, it's not a fiddle. I know it may seem like it. So, the length from centre of one arch to the centre of the next arch is 31 cubits. Now, if our suggestion is correct, it must divide into 365. Not surprising, therefore, it does divide exactly into 85 arches. Now, we've got 85 arches. Either 9 or 10 or 11 of those arches are the gates. The remainder must be for the chambers between the gates. There are 10 of those chambers. Aha, says the critic. However many you have, whether it's 9 or 10 or 11, doesn't matter what you take 85, the remainder isn't divisible by 10, therefore it must be wrong. Not so. Remember we said before that the spaces between the gates weren't necessarily equal. And they don't have to be. There's nothing in the scripture which says that they are all equal, the chambers between the gates, and so we can make them anything we like, provided the sum plus the gates adds up to 85. There are one or two other suggestions which you may like to consider. We said each side was in 10 gates. So, let's have a look at them all. Remember, the gates plus the number of arches for the chambers must always add up to 85. So if we have 9 gates, then we're left with 76. With Brother Sully's 11 gates, then there are 74 arches left for the chambers. Now, you may like to think that there are 12 gates. I know there's one brother in the room who's rather fond of that suggestion. If that is the case, and it could be, 12 is a very fitting number for this building, then one of the gates mentioned must be doubled up, because you can have as many gates as you like, but the spaces between the gates has fixed at 10. So the only way you could have more than 11 is to have a double gate in one or more places. There could be 15 gates. An interesting suggestion insofar as you can then make it exactly symmetrical. You can also have 70 arches for the 10 chambers along each side. Now, some may have an affinity with the idea that there are 70 arches. It leaves us with 7 times 10. It has perfection times completion. It's a 70, which is the number of the Gentiles, the number of the nations, and the nations which are coming up to worship. There's a ring about 70 which has an appeal. You then got 15 gates, which speaks of resurrection and grace. Having said all that, brethren and sisters, you can't prove it. Your choice is entirely up to you. There is another, just putting it, no, we can't, we'll drop it on the floor. But with 70 gates, with 70 arches for each section, it does mean that the space between the gates would be the same along the entire length, which is another reason, perhaps, for 15 gates. We can't say any more. We want to have a brief look at the different sides. The west gate, the western side, is easy to describe insofar as it is not mentioned. There are no details for it, and as we said, it's the back of the building and doesn't warrant a mention in the description. If we come to chapter 40 and verse 35, we looked at this briefly before. We'll just pick up verse 38 of chapter 40. And the chambers and the entries thereof were by the posts of the gates, where they washed the burnt offering. And the porch of the gates, 2 tables on this side, and 2 tables on that side, to slay thereon the burnt offerings. We looked at that detail before. But suffice it to say, that only on the north side are those sacrificial arrangements mentioned. And so, only on the north side is there facility for those mortals which come to the temple to worship and to bring their sacrifices. Only on that north side can their offerings be prepared. Can they be killed and separated and washed and so on according to the law. Although each of the north and the south and the east sides are mentioned in chapter 40, Only on the north side are the sacrificial arrangements described, and so we feel sure that they are only on that north side, which would seem to suggest that on the south side a different arrangement prevails. Now, it's not described, so again we're in the realms of suggestion. And other sacrifices are mentioned, sacrifices which are not animal offerings. They are meal offerings, in other words. And it may be the case, and we can be no more dogmatic than that, it may be the case that those who want to offer animal sacrifices must go in at the north, and those who wish to offer other types of offering must go in on the south. Chapter 46 and verse 9 describes a one-way system. Chapter 46 and verse 9, when the people of the land shall come before Yahweh in the solemn feasts, he that entereth in by the way of the north gate to worship shall go out by the way of the south gate. He that entereth by the way of the south gate shall go forth by the way of the north gate. He shall not return by the way of the gate whereby he came in, but shall go forth over against. And so there is this one-way system. Those that go in at the north must go out at the south. That's not to suggest that people keep moving. They will be there for quite some considerable time. But to bring a sense of order and direction, then this arrangement plainly is deemed to be necessary. Just by way then of conclusion, in this section, chapter 42 and verse 13. Chapter 42 and verse 13. Then said he unto me, the north chambers and the south chambers, which are before the separate place. That's a description that we haven't come across before. A separate place, if we're looking at plate 2, is marked by a letter B. The separate place is the corners, which are between the square and the circle. I won't describe it any more than that. But suffice it to say, the chambers which are before the separate place must be the chambers which relate to the inner court, because the chambers which relate to the outer court cannot be described as being before the separate place. Those of the separate place must be adjacent to the and part of, indeed, the inner court. So then, we're in on the north side and the south side, and just this inner row of buildings there. Where the priests that approach unto Yahweh shall eat the most holy things. There they shall lay the most holy things, and the meat offering, and the sin offering, and the trespass offering, for the place is holy. When the priests enter therein, then they shall not go out of the holy place unto the utter court, but there they shall lay their garments wherein they minister, for they are holy. And they shall put on other garments, and shall approach unto those things which are for the people. And there is a degree of holiness, if there can be described as such a thing. Outside of the building is profane. We then have the outer court, is holy, and then is most holy by the time we come inside the circle where the altar is. And so those priests which minister, as they go through these buildings into the outer court, have to change their garments, because they are not allowed to go into the outer court in the same garments that they go into the most holy parts. And so that inner leaf is particularly for the priests, and where they lay the most holy things. That doesn't mean that those buildings are exclusively for that. Remember, there are several stories, and it's a very large building, and so different uses can be found in different parts. Now, that leads us on to the subject of the priesthood, and indeed the prince himself, which we shall consider in our second half, God willing.